Welcome to Highly Successful Couples, the podcast that helps couples grow together instead of growing apart. My name is Nick Solacek. I'm a relationship coach certified in couples therapy. And if you want to better understand the phases of relationship, which phase you're in, and how you can create more wins in your love life, then you're going to enjoy today's show. Welcome to the first episode. In the spirit of transparency, I want to say that I really didn't want to start a podcast. I thought that there are enough people speaking into microphones, sharing their opinions, and that the space is crowded. And we're living in a time with infinite content, streaming for the rest of your life, 24/7, anything that you want. And there's some incredible content out there. This is also partly the reason that I decided to start a podcast, which is that there's a lot of noise, a lot of myths, a lot of bad actors out there that don't always have their audience's best interest in mind. And in the realm of relationships, there are a lot of conversations that are focused on creating drama and emphasizing the differences between people. And I don't find that a lot of these conversations are very connective. There are a lot of amazing podcasts out there as well, a lot of people doing it right. For over a decade, I've also consistently received comments about my voice and whether I'd ever considered doing radio or podcasting. So I've been getting this message, and today I've decided to give it a shot. So thanks for tuning in, seeing what might be here for you. Now that I'm actually getting started, I'm excited by the opportunity of reaching more people and sharing insights that could make a difference. I'm making this an ad-free experience because, frankly, I'm sick of advertising. I'm sure you are as well. Streaming promised that maybe we'd break free from all of that, but now we're basically back to our experience of regular cable TV with ad breaks, multiple subscriptions, and we're paying about the same as we were before as well. I'm kind of getting this feeling that nothing's sacred anymore. I understand that we need to all pay the bills, but I also want to create experiences that are valuable to people and respect their time. I want to have important conversations without a plug for the latest mattress that's going to change your sleep hygiene, or the incredible new supplement that's going to rewire your brain and turn you into something like Bradley Cooper from the movie Limitless. Surely you've had this experience. The host is talking about the epidemic of teenage suicide and depression. And then in the very next breath, we hear, "Do you struggle with meal prep? I want to share something with you that's changed my life." And I really feel like there's nothing worse than someone having a conversation about the important or dark aspects of our society, the real challenges that we face, and have that interrupted by an advertisement. I believe that we need more ad-free conversations about the things that matter the most to us. And obviously, there are many people out there doing the same thing. I'm not a superhero. I just want to create high-quality experiences and not waste your time. Unfortunately, I can't control what every platform is going to do with the content. But as far as Apple Podcasts is concerned, I think that I've got a space here to simply share the episodes without interruption, at least for now. Okay, end of rant. This podcast is about relationships, and most of our suffering in life comes from our relationships, whether they're with romantic partners, family, friends, coworkers, or the people we're close in proximity with. While we're going to focus on romantic partnership, we're also going to cover a range of subjects that extend to other areas of life and the things that couples generally struggle with. I created this show because I want to help redefine what success in relationship looks like. We typically think of success as simply having money, being a homeowner, having a nice car that we love, having investments or financial plan for the future. And while I believe that having financial security is important, success in relationships will require a lot more than simply having money. We have a lot to learn and work on, as well as certain pitfalls that we want to avoid. And you know this is true because rich people break up all the time. Poor people break up too, but my point is that some of the classic ideas of success are not enough to make our relationships work. It might reduce the pressure and lower our anxiety levels about paying the bills if we've got money, but we still face other challenges about being together. The point, it doesn't matter how much fame, money, or talent you have. If you don't know how to do something, you just don't know how to do it. And relationships are one of those things. If you want your relationship to work, you have to learn how. It will not randomly happen on its own because great relationships are created. They are not found. And we have to create them together. It is a co-creation. As my mother likes to say, it takes two to tango. When it comes to creating positive changes, it's going to take two people to make it happen. In my experience, it's very difficult to transform your relationship completely on your own. You can do things as an individual to make improvements, but if you want to have a deeper sense of aliveness and safety in your partnership, it will require both people to focus on specific things. And working on things as an individual is very different than working on things as a couple. In order to emphasize this, I want to share a concept called the space between. I first encountered this concept through the work of Dr. Harville Hendricks and Dr. Helen Hunt in their best-selling book, Getting the Love You Want. Most couples therapists understand this concept and attempt to work on the space between in different ways. Part of this understanding includes the knowing that our relationship cannot be bought and sold. It's an idea. It is intangible. It can't be boxed up. The entire relationship exists in the space between us and our partner. And for that reason, we can transform the relationship by transforming the space. If both people are putting positivity into the space, you're going to get that back. And it might take one of you to go first. It might take one partner to start putting positivity into the space for a period of time before they start to notice that their partner is giving it back. This understanding is also at the core of the therapy modality that I'm certified in, which is known as Imago Couples Therapy. We'll talk more about Imago throughout our journey in this podcast. And for now, I'll just say that Imago is Latin for image. And in the context of relationship work, there's a composite image of your primary caretakers, mom and dad, or whoever raised you. This image is at the heart of the Imago theory, which suggests that we're drawn towards romantic partners who match this image, which is stored in our psyche. So we're drawn towards a familiar kind of love and dynamic that we had as a kid. Our romantic partner might look nothing like our parents. We might actually pick them because they look nothing like our parents, or we perceive them to be nothing like the people that we grew up with that might have harmed us or hurt us in certain ways, or just shown up in a less than ideal way. But our partner, romantic partners tend to possess traits that remind us of our parents. And so if you've ever thought or said out loud, God, you're just like my mother, you're just like my father, this is your Imago image working its magic. Once you begin to understand more about how this works and what your opportunities are, you'll become more fascinated with this understanding and feel a lot more hopeful about how positive changes can actually be made and how you can create the relationship that you desire. Most of us experience this kind of disappointing and even nightmarish experience. We feel the loss of love and confusion. We experience a sense of disillusion with this pattern occurring once or even over and over again as we meet, try new partners over time. So today I'd like to talk about some of the main patterns we experience by discussing the four phases of relationship. There are different thoughts on this, and relationships are more complicated than four simple phases, but there are some general patterns. The first phase that you're familiar with and have experienced if you've ever been in a relationship is a honeymoon. In the honeymoon phase, everything's amazing. It's this blissful merging, this experience of being focused on our similarities, noticing all the things that we have in common, our similar lifestyle activities and values. We're high on our own neurochemical supply. There's this kind of preparing for the journey ahead that's part of this, that our body is generating these, pumping out these chemical compounds that bond us together for the road ahead. And we are excited. We project that our partner is going to satisfy all of our needs. We imagine our partner as this source of pleasure and this person that is going to support us, meet our needs in certain ways, whether that's for sexual expression, emotional expression, partnership, companionship, friendship, maybe an adventure buddy. Whether we've discussed this with them or not, we just project that this person is going to make us happy, that they're going to meet our needs in every way. And this is a phase because it has a beginning and an end. This honeymoon bubble bursts for everyone at some point, and they enter the power struggle. Nobody ever breaks up in the honeymoon because it feels so good. When we get to this power struggle phase, we start to notice differences between us and our partner. Our brain codes these differences as danger, and that starts to create a sense of anxiety for us. And when we feel anxiety, we typically use negativity to try to get our partner to change. So there's typically two ways that we deal with our anxiety in relationship. The first is hiding and denying, and the second is fighting and arguing. Our preferred or default method of coping typically drives our partner crazy, creates fights and conflict and disagreement. And some of us are able to work through these issues. We're able to negotiate things with our partner and create agreements. But many of us use strategies that are ineffective. And those strategies are usually the ones that we learn to use in childhood to protect ourselves. This can result in repetitive, unproductive conversations that leave people feeling stuck. The paradox is that within these challenges exist important growth opportunities. And I think I'll just apologize now for saying growth opportunity a lot. It's going to come up on this podcast because this is part of the new paradigm. This is part of the new philosophy that can help you break through some of these difficult dynamics that you experience. In the power struggle phase, we want our partner to be different. We want them to be different than the way that we perceive them. And we specifically want them to meet a need that our parents never met. There's an understanding that we all bring an unmet need into our adult relationships from childhood. In terms of the need that our parents never met, we're going to get into that more later in this podcast, not in today's show, but in future episodes. And it's going to be different for everyone. There are some similar themes out there, but you're going to have a unique, specific need that's important to you. The point here is that the power struggle is also a phase. And we start to feel disillusioned about romantic love at all. We start to feel a little bit hopeless about making the relationship we are in or any relationship work. And just like the honeymoon, the power struggle phase is kind of a happening. We don't flick the switch to turn it on. We don't want it to happen at all, but it happens to us. And there's something that can feel a little bit powerless about that, especially if we repeat the same patterns over and over again. We find us in relationships that only last 3 to 6 months or only last 10 months to a year, which was my experience for a long period of time. Couldn't really get through the power struggle. And in the beginning, I set myself up for failure in a number of ways by not being clear about what I wanted or putting some of my needs aside, which is basically like choosing attachment over authenticity, which we'll also talk more about in this show. So we got honeymoon, power struggle. If couples fail to break free from the power struggle experience, they end up in a coping dead zone. Generally, you don't have much sex in this phase because you're both feeling very disconnected. And couples can cope with this in different ways. They can get cold and distant. They can get angry and loud. They might use affairs, alcohol and other drugs, television, late nights at work, video games, social media, pornography, or some other experience as an exit strategy. And I'm not saying that any of these things are wrong or bad. You and your partner have to decide what works for you in your relationship. But when too much of our energy goes into a specific direction, it can become an exit strategy. And there can be something as simple as just staring at your phone over dinner instead of interacting with your partner, choosing some other way to exit the moment or avoid the discomfort of what's going on. We cope with the pain of our situation by choosing some kind of energetic leak that will take pressure off us or bring us pleasure. Typically, these choices avoid intimacy and vulnerability. We simply want to reduce the pain that we're feeling. And rather than making a commitment to growth and change, many people stay stuck in this phase. Many of the couples you know that have been together for 10, 20, 30, 40 years are in a kind of coping dead zone. Some people also choose to leave their relationship when it gets to this place and start again. They go out and try to find someone that will love them in the way that they want to be loved, to meet a partner who can meet their needs in the way that they want. And ultimately, they can come back again to a power struggle experience. Obviously, not all relationships are meant to be. Not all partners are meant to be together forever. I believe that sometimes we come together to learn clear lessons, to better understand ourselves, and not everyone is destined for a lifelong partnership. If you want to be in a lifelong partnership, you and your partner want that, and you want to create something that's more empowered, has more freedom, then you might be looking for something called conscious relationship or connected relationship. This is simply a mature, developed adult love. And at some point, we have a choice. We have a choice to make a new commitment to conscious relationship. And that's really what this podcast is all about, trying to help couples grow together instead of growing apart. This might mean committing to waking up to the patterns in your relationship that aren't working. Might mean becoming more aware of how your childhood experience plays a role in your adult behavior today. Most couples don't enter this stage because they don't know it's possible. They never had any teachers, role models, or examples in their family system. And a conscious relationship aspires to create a culture of appreciation, understanding, and respect. Couples will need to understand and commit to principles of safety and aliveness, which we're also going to learn more about on this show. You also need to commit to removing negativity from your relationship, which is a really big deal because we have a negativity bias. We're typically focused on and threatened by the things that aren't working, the things that don't feel good. And we really can get into a deep trench there with negativity. Part of our brain thinks that negativity works to protect ourselves and get our partner to change, but it really doesn't. It simply just arouses anxiety, which is not the kind of arousal that most couples are looking for. Our brain needs new evidence and new proof that there's another way to work through things. No matter what type of conscious relationship you want to create, you'll simply need to turn the awareness way up. And this will require you to grow, to do things you haven't done before, to be more curious, to set aside time for intentional conversations with your partner. I want to come back to the power struggle phase because this is a phase that will reoccur in your relationship as you grow, and it also is likely playing a role in your life right now, especially if you're feeling stuck. If you're feeling stuck in your relationship, it's because you're in the power struggle or the coping phase. You know you're in the power struggle when you constantly think your partner is too much this or not enough that. You might find yourself constantly nitpicking, judging them, or you might generally find them annoying. We're all annoying. We're all a burden to each other. We're needy in different ways, and making a relationship work over time is hard work. So we got to get curious about this. What's actually going on in your relationship? Is your partner willing to grow with you? Are they open to creating positive changes, which means creating behavior change? Or do you just not like who they are as a person? There's a difference between not liking someone for who they are fundamentally and being annoyed by some of their behaviors. Here are some things that I have learned are a key part of the power struggle experience. And the first piece is that power struggles are 100% about childhood. This means that there's a historical context driving your reactivity today. There's something from the past that makes experiences in your adult life a little bit more sensitive or more triggering or more disturbing to you. And reactivity does not just mean getting loud, getting angry, and exploding as we might think of a big reaction. Reactivity is also getting small, constricting, shutting down, getting quiet, getting distant and withdrawing. The power struggle has some complicated dynamics involved in the process. And to just speak more about this historical context, in the power struggle phase, early ruptures and disappointments with our parents are played out in our adult relationship. So disappointments, frustrations, or annoyances we had as a kid have a tendency to show up in the power struggle with our partner. We lose connection with our partner in the power struggle, just like we lost connection as a child when there was a rupture or a disconnection with our caretaker. And if you're able to remember your childhood, you might remember a moment, a key moment in time where a parent let you down or they disapproved or punished or judged or used guilt or control or smothering that just created a little bit of a disconnect. It doesn't need to be a massive rupture for this to happen. It can be something small can be a key moment, it can be some pattern over time. Part of many couples' theories and part of my belief is that the power struggle is an intelligent process that is trying to get us to look at what is unresolved within us. This stuff from the past that we haven't totally processed or understood or let go of. And this phase highlights the immature, underdeveloped aspects of us and gives us an opportunity to expand, to grow, to learn, and to transcend issues from our past. So in short, conflict in your relationship is growth trying to happen. The power struggle is actually a push towards wholeness and aliveness. It's a chance for us to reclaim the parts of us that were underdeveloped or undernurtured in childhood. The truth is that most of us don't always look at it this way, and our parents didn't look at it this way. Most of the couples we see on TV or out there in the world or in movies don't look at it this way. If they did, the content, the shows, everything would seem a lot less dramatic because there would be a sense of peace or safety or understanding. And most shows that portray relationships highlight toxic or stressful or tense dynamics because there's something interesting about that to us. There's some tension there that drives the plot or drives the story. So we have an opportunity to change this for ourselves. And I believe that we need to. We need a new paradigm that can help us get unstuck. Recently, I heard entrepreneur Alex Hormozi discussing playing to win versus playing not to lose. And this is an interesting frame to explore some of the choices we make in relationship and the kinds of games that we play with our partner. So as we're discussing this, just think about, are you playing to win or are you playing simply not to lose? Playing not to lose could look like just not breaking up. You know, no matter what's going on, let's just stay together, you know, no matter how bad it is. Maybe having this quiet or loud sentiment, please don't leave me, you know, hanging on really tight, clinging to our partner. Maybe avoiding important conversations because you're afraid it might start a fight or that your partner might leave you. Believing that you're broken and your partner's got it all figured out and they know how to be. Or maybe you believe that your partner has all the issues and you're perfect. Playing not to win or playing just not to lose is staying together no matter what. It's beautiful to be committed. And, you know, we got to be committed to make our relationships work and hang in there in difficult times. But no matter what includes certain possible extremes. And I believe that we all benefit from having some sense of our limitations and boundaries. That doesn't mean we need to be extremely rigid or all or nothing about things. But if something's going on that we don't like, how can we course correct and create meaningful changes instead of staying stuck? If we simply stay together no matter what, we can endure some painful patterns over a long period of time without having an experience that's actually meaningful to us. And I don't need to go into detail into abusive patterns and toxic dynamics that we all have experienced from time to time, either on our own partnership or through proximity to other people's relationship. You guys get that. You know, playing to lose is, or playing not to lose might look like biting your tongue because you're afraid of disagreement, avoiding talking about things because you're afraid of the consequences. Avoiding working on things altogether and submitting to the fact that a great relationship is just not meant for you. Maybe dismissing therapy even when your partner tells you that they're struggling and they want to go get help or they feel that you need support. And I'm sure you can come up with other examples of how you see this kind of just playing not to lose scenario. What could be more valuable to you is actually identifying how you can play to win. Playing to win might be learning about relationship psychology and the nervous system, investing in yourselves, creating a set of shared goals, creating agreements about what works for you as a couple, designing a relationship vision. It's like waving the magic wand. How good could this get? How fun could this be? Learning how to love each other better, playing a bigger game, getting excited about what might be possible for you. Versus believing that the past determines the future. Playing to win means understanding there is a historical context that impacts your adult relationship. A more advanced piece of this is giving each other what you wanted and needed the most as a child, but didn't get. learning how to do that now as adults and become allies in each other's healing and growth. I believe this is one of the most powerful play-to-win strategies, because if you can do this, you will totally transform the quality of your relationship. So this is my perspective, but what is yours? What does it mean for you to win? What does success look like for you and for your partner? Instead of focusing on what other people are doing or focusing on what society says you should do, what do you want to create? Instead of living your parents' vision or your boss's vision or your friends, sibling, neighbors, etc., what do you actually want? What is most important to you? Most of us listening to this conversation want similar things, but we also have big differences. So the question that I'll leave you with here is, what does being a highly successful couple look and feel like to you? At the end of your life, if you had a moment to reflect and look back, which we don't all get, but just in this thought exercise, what would you be proud of creating? You know, reflecting back on your life, what would you feel like a meaningful use of your time here on this planet is? And what would be the best experience you could have in partnership and relationship? What do you want to create together? What do you want to build? What direction are you headed? What would warm your heart and bring a few tears of joy to your eyes? What if you and your partner ask themselves the same question? And that's where I'll leave you today. I created this show with my audience in mind, which means no ads or sponsors or wasting your time. So if you love this podcast, consider leaving a 5-star review. It helps support the show, which will then help more people in creating relationships that they love. And if you enjoyed this conversation, my online course will blow your mind. You can learn more about that at nicksolacek.com/reset. Thank you for tuning in and spending time with me today. I look forward to sharing more with you next week.